Welcome to a brand new episode of the Frontend Happy Hour podcast. Maybe it's just me, but I've over the years have found doing authentication is just a difficult problem in software engineering. It's not very intuitive. And so in this episode, we are joined by Braden Sidoti. Like, yes, I just wanted to make sure.
Sidoti, yeah. If you want to go.
There, yes. I need my Italian in me. That is good. He is the co-founder and CTO of Clerk to talk with us about authentication. Braden, maybe you can, you know, say your name better than me, but can you give a brief introduction of who you are, what you do, and what your favorite happy hour beverage is?
Yeah. So that was a great intro. Thank you. My name is Braden. I've been a developer since college, I guess, or even in college, I did random stuff. I think it was Java. But for a long time, I made iPhone apps, which it started in 2009 or 10 or something like that. The first iPhone app that I targeted was iPhone 3GS, which was like the right before
that was
the
very,
iPhone
like,
4.
Yeah, that was kind of like the first or second real version after their kind of beta.
Yeah, it was like 08, 09.
Yeah.
And worked for some like consulting shop that like I kind of just, they hired me while I hadn't graduated college yet, but they hired me and I just like learned on that job and it was a good experience. Consultancies are a great place to like learn programming. You just get tossed apps and you can make the worst app ever. But 1 month later, you're working on a new one. So you really get that iteration. And anyway, I made iPhone apps for a really, really long time, especially during that era. Like always, like people are always talking about or asking about side projects. And I was kind of the person who always had some sort of a side project, and authentication often came up and was often a pain. I think it was an extra painful experience coming from the iOS world because you are not only your client side, it's like its own device. It's like a different client than like a front end client, like a web client, where you're like kind of closer to the back end, you have to interact with it more. But anyway, it was just a whole, like the server was a whole different world. So it made standing up a back end much scarier because, you know, you couldn't use Objective-C or Swift in the back end. You kind of can, but not really. I wouldn't recommend it.
Also, like when you're talking, if you were dealing with authentication, like in the, you know, 08, 09, no Swift at that point, you were just doing Objective-C.
Yeah, you're just fighting with weak and strong and all sorts of fun things.
I gave up so quickly. Like, I just remember being like, wow, yeah, iOS apps. Like, yes, I want to build that. And quickly fizzled out. Like, I got a couple proof of concepts similar to you. I was working in like agencies and consulting where it was cool because you would just like, you could do something, kind of get it out the door and then jump on your next thing. Like, I think I learned every single JavaScript framework over the years as I was doing that. Cause like every company would be like, oh, we want to use Dojo. We want to use like Backbone. We want to use Angular. And you're like, all right, like got to figure that out. But yeah, Objective-C I only did a little bit of, and I was no good at it.
I guess it takes time. I realized I misspoke before because Arc automatic reference counting came out like right when I was starting. So I was still doing reference counting, which meant you had to like, when an object was like allocated, you had to like increase the counter by one and then decrease the counter. And if you messed it up, then your objects would live forever and you would have memory leaks. And it was bad news on whatever memory constrained device you had in 2007. But then automatic reference counting came out and then you can declare things weak or strong. And it was its whole different paradigm, but also fun.
Okay.
I don't know. I kind of like that stuff.
No, anyway. I think it's like, I think I just got discouraged short and brief and like wish I stuck with it a little bit more because later on I did a little bit more with iOS and it was like, yeah, I really enjoyed it. So I wish I did more. Maybe it was just the web keeping me.
That's fair. Yeah. For me, it was like more tangible, I think. Like the thing on your phone is, it's on your phone. It's like you can hold it and grab it and you build an app for it. Whereas the web is slightly more abstract, not too much abstract, more abstract. But also, I don't know, it was my first job. So I just, first thing I learned, I, you know, dove deep. And it didn't change as much. Like the change from Objective-C to Swift was like a 4 or 5 year slow like burn of like dealing with like 6 to 7 shitty beta versions that all had their own issues. Whereas the web changes so quickly.
Oh, just like, yeah. I swear, like as we're talking, I probably have like, you know, something's changed that I need to go learn. And it's like, yeah, it just constantly changes. You're right. The ecosystem around iOS was a little bit smaller. So not the end of the world. Yeah. Cool. Anyway, well, I, yeah. Authentication.
That was the start of my intro. I didn't even get very far. But anyway, I mean, I've been for a long time. Side projects always need authentication.
Yes.
Back in about 2018, I was asking my brother, Colin, who is a co-founder of Clerk. I was asking him how to do authentication. I was like, why is this always so hard? And, you know, he pointed me to Auth0 and some, he was a Rails guy. So also like Devise and setting that up. And I hated Rails. Quite frankly, it was very confusing to me.
I'm with you. I'm no hate on that. I'm like, yeah, I didn't do so well with Rails either.
Anyway, we just decided collectively there should be an easier way. And that's when we set out to kind of make it easier. And Clerk kind of evolved from there.
Awesome. That's super helpful. And then I guess, yeah, favorite happy hour beverage.
It might be a Moscow Mule. Drinking a Moscow Mule, they're very delicious. They're probably too easy to drink. I have to calm down in mind for today, talking faster, but you know.
Yeah. And you are drinking it in the proper copper mug too, which is awesome. That helps make it stay cold. That's probably why it goes down so much easier too.
You know, I don't think it helps make it stay cold. Maybe it does. I just know the cup is cold, right? And it makes your hand cold, which probably means it's not retaining heat very well at all. But it's all about that feeling, right? Like, oh, it's cold. It feels good. I like it.
Yeah.
So
that works. It's a good drink. I'm a fan as well. Along with Braden joining us, Clerk has been nice enough to help support Front End Happy Hour podcast and sponsor this episode. With Clerk, you get complete user management with pre-built UI components for sign in, sign up, user profiles, and organizations. The authentication is MFA, SSO, magic links, SMS, and bot detection. Clerk provides helpful SDKs for modern frameworks such as Next.js and React. Seamless integrations with popular databases, even Clerk's free tier offers up to 10,000 monthly active users, and you never pay for a user's first day. Everything you need to authenticate and manage your users, freeing you up to focus on building. So yeah, let's maybe get back to authentication. Maybe we'll start off too, like, because you mentioned a few methods like OAuth and Divide, I believe, for Rails. What are the common methods of like for software authentication used by modern applications today? Like if you were building something, what are your options?
So it somewhat depends on what kind of application you're building, but the options really haven't changed. And there's kind of like a theory behind authentication in general, and it's really boring. It's like not anything revolutionary, but as far as authentication goes, there's like three different ways to authenticate. There is something that you know, something that you have, and something that you are. Those are like the three types of secrets. Something that you know is like a password. Mm-hmm. Something that you have is usually a YubiKey, but like there's like a phone is a decent proxy for something that you have. Well, a phone is something that you have. However, SMS message is a decent proxy for having a phone, which is, it's not perfect. And then something you are is like biometrics, which is its own thing. So like when you start talking about, like those are the three ways to prove you are who you are, right? You need to have, it's one of those three things. Maybe there's a fourth there's some other one that I'm missing, but those are the standard three. And so when people talk about multi-factor auth, it's usually you should have two of those three categories. Yeah, so it's not rocket science, but the most standard one is passwords. That's been around forever, username, password. Then there's any variation of having an email address. Mm-hmm. And that basically boils down to something you know. If you follow the chain, sending yourself an email code and then opening your email and clicking on that and getting that code, boils down to the password you know on your email address, something you know. And then, yeah, you mentioned OAuth. OAuth is kind of basically another proxy of something you know, depending on how it's implemented, especially if you sign in with Google or sign in with Facebook, it usually boils down to the weak point, which is that password. It always goes back. Right. It usually goes back to a password. unless of course you have the UDK. But yeah, I mean, that's really it. Those are the ways to sign in. That's like the very bare bones of it. It's funny. I think like the reason it is so complicated and it is so painful is, to me, it's a lot of it's the web. The web makes things much more challenging than they need to be. It's like this weird quasi-secure environment that you need to know so much about that we are just trying to simplify and make it so you don't, as a developer, need to know all of the nonsense. You don't need to know about how cookies work. You don't need to know about browsers work or the differences between Safari and Chrome and Firefox. Like, it should just work, and you should be able to just work off of a different abstraction that is like much, much more simple. And we hide away all of the ugliness. That's at least the entire premise of Clerk, and that's what drives everything we do. And often it makes a lot of challenging work for us internally to hide some of the ugliness, especially on browsers. But yeah, I mean, it's like the first thing you often have to do whenever you're making any sort of application. And it's also obnoxiously challenging when all you want to do is build your application. So
yeah, that's not the like fun part, really. It's like, you're like, no, I have to do this. Not always. There's some applications you don't need to like authenticate, but majority of them you do at some for pretty much everything. And yeah, it's just like the one thing as a developer, I'm not like, you know what I love doing is building authentication. Like, it's not like fun at all. You're like, I need it. I want it to work. I want it to be secure. But I think then even also like you nailed it on the browser aspect, like dealing with cookies, each browser is a little bit finicky that you're having to deal with. And it's all those little nuances that add up really quickly. And you do, if you can just abstract that away, have an API that kind of takes care of that for you, that's huge. And you just don't have to worry about it. But yeah, building that authentication, also another thing is worrying about the security. Like, I've never considered myself a security expert. I've, you know, definitely worked with a lot of security engineers over the years, learned a lot building my own applications, but it's not easy. Like, I remember rolling my own authentication over the years, and it's like, the amount of mistakes I made that for simple hacks that I'm like, oh yeah, I should probably prevent that injection. That probably is not a good thing. And it's like those little things, it's a lot to remember. So I love hearing about the abstraction, but yeah, like what else has been really difficult? You mentioned too, like iOS working on that, and that you were frustrated, and almost why Clerk exists is because there's got to be an easier way.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. It's and I kind of have issues with easy, the word easy, because it's like, it's not hard. It's like authentication.
That's fair.
It's not hard. It's big, right?
Yes.
It's just very, very big, and all of the little steps compound and make it way more complicated than what you want to do when you're just trying to build whatever you're trying to build, and. Should you have a security expert who's keeping up to date on all of the weird changes in browsers and weird exploits that come up? Like, it's like just its own kind of full-time job. And I don't think like everyone who's a developer, I think, is very, very capable of doing it and learning all of it. Like, it's all straightforward. It's just like these basic flows. And honestly, it's like a lot of them are outlined by the government. Like, a lot of what we implement is just like the NIST guidelines, and they've done a ton of research, and that's what we follow for the most part. And yeah, so it's just a lot. But things that have been hard, the things that have been hard is making it easy, quite frankly, and abstracting it. That's definitely been the hardest part of it. And it still is today. It's, I mean, another hard part is keeping up with all the insane trends in, the JavaScript ecosystem, the JavaScript world. That's
so
constantly
like in the frameworks and things like that, or just literally things that need to drastically change from a security standpoint, or maybe both.
Yeah. I mean, well, we started 5 years ago, like right before COVID. And so in that time, browsers have started to get rid of like third-party cookies, which you shouldn't be using for authentication anyway. However, we have hacks around that in development to make development instances easier. But that's changed multiple times, and it's not like consistent across browsers. So like Safari broke it first, And then I think Firefox followed, and like Google's kind of like lagging. But there's also changes there just on the browser level on how cookies are handled, which for us at least, we want that startup experience to be incredibly simple. We want you to be able to add authentication in a couple lines of code and not have to worry about like CORS errors and things like that, which means we are a little bit more lax on the security in the development thing, in the development ecosystem. There, I feel like we kind of had to rebuild that, just that part, how authentication works in development instances simply, like three or four times in the past 5 years. I guess too, I should explain that like when you're starting up your application in development, you're usually on localhost 3000, and your API is usually something else. Maybe it's localhost 3001. That's now immediately a cross-origin system. And so if you don't set that up or know to set that up immediately, you're going to run into a CORS error and you're going to hit Stack Overflow and probably burn a couple hours, which is annoying. It's annoying to learn. So how do you actually act that way? But I mean, so that like dealing with that is annoying. But then even in the framework level, like Next.js has kind of like, well, it's like we started with server-side rendering with Rails, and then we went to like React and client-side rendering, and there's a whole bunch of caveats there. And now we're going back to server-side rendering and React server components, and dealing like authentication is state that needs to load at the start of each of these things and still be secure across development environments and production environments, and they work in slightly different ways. It's just a pain. Like that's definitely been the most challenging thing and the thing that we've spent the most time on, and we're still working on that because yeah, there's just kind of a lot there. I guess so again, these are all like I'm talking about all things that are not even authentication, right?
Yeah, no, those are simple things. Like even just like setting a cookie. I mean, like that, we do that for many things across different browsers, but like you said, even just across browser or cross domain, like all those types of things, like, yep, nodding along, going, oh, right, like that changed. And like you have to deal with that change too, right? The consumers using something like Clerk, they're, you know, the developers are like, I don't want to worry about that. Like that's something that you all are thinking about.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I guess back to like what our ethos is this should be easy. You shouldn't need to learn about, you shouldn't have to know anything about security in order to add this piece of functionality to your application. Like how many develop, like it's like almost any developer that wants to build an application has to be immediately become a security expert, even to implement like the most basic things. And like you talked about OAuth in the beginning, it's like, why do you need to know about that protocol? Like, do you really care about that protocol, or do you want it as a way to build whatever application you're building? And it's just such a huge blocker and time barrier. And again, it's not hard. Anyone can go research it and look it up. But it's like, why? Like, it's like if somebody can abstract, why hasn't somebody, well, we're trying to do it, but it's taken a long time to actually abstract that away. I mean, OAuth, there's more things with OAuth as well. Like there is the simple login scenario, but there's also the sharing data across applications. You sign in with Google or Gmail and you want this application to have access to these scopes. But basically what that means is you want this application to be able to do something like send an email on your behalf or read your Google Docs or do something like that. And again, that's like a whole, it's tied to this authentication authorization, like square or circle, whatever you want to say, but it's pain to learn. And it's like there's not, I mean, that's it, that's even messier. Like the further you kind of get away from what's cemented, the messier it gets. Like there's, we probably have implemented like 30 or 40 like OAuth providers, and most of them are the same. Most of them follow the spec, but they don't all follow the spec, and there's weird intricacies about all of them. And I don't even think we're pulling in the authorization piece. Like everyone handles scopes differently and stuff like that. Like you try and get five multi-billion-dollar companies to agree on doing something, and you know, they'll agree, and then you'll get like SAML, and you're like, well, what the fuck is this?
Well, and it's hard too, because they all have to go implement it. Like, even you get the agreeing on it takes the time, but then there's so much time to implement, right? That's not necessarily their like top priority. And so it kind of just gets kicked down the line. Well, yeah, we'll deal with it next quarter. And they're like, yeah, we didn't quite get there. And so like, that makes sense too, is it's really hard to even just get that alignment. And that's even why browsers, you know, roll things out so differently. It's just like, really, what are those teams working on? And, you know, how does it get out there? So yes, that would definitely make it harder.
Yep. Yeah. So it's just a deceptively large problem that every application needs, that even with the existing providers, like Auth0 has done a lot of things that have been amazing. They were built, they started 10, 15 years ago when, at least in my mind, a lot of this stuff wasn't nearly as cemented as it was even 5 years ago or even today. Like, they have, it's a much more, I don't want to say powerful platform, but it's a much more flexible platform, in that they give you all these building blocks and they're like, go do it yourself because there's no right way to do this.
Right.
What Clerk is like, no, there's a right way to do this. Go look at like accounts.google.com or like Gmail and see how they do it. And that's the right way to do it. Like, anyone who doesn't have that, it's like just a lesser version of that. So how do we serviceize that? And that's kind of
right. And I mean, if it's working for a large application like Gmail or just Google, like all of Google accounts, it's like, we're probably pretty good. Like most companies, if you're following that standard, that's probably pretty good. So yeah, I like that you're like, there is a right way, or at least a standard that we could be sticking towards. So that makes a ton of sense. Curious, you mentioned like, you know, some of the like security issues, and that's something that, you know, I've run into them definitely throughout my career, but like, you know, what are some of the best practices that you think of for securing authentication that, like, you know, obviously you all at Clerk are thinking about them, but like, even if developers are rolling their own, like, what are some of the things they should be thinking about?
I guess the most basic, I mean, there's kind of a lot, quite frankly. I mean, the most basic is a username password, right? But even that's not perfectly secure. If you have a username password, you already don't have a way to, have a forgot password flow, because you don't have an email to send it to. So you kind of want that. You want the email and the kind of forgot password flow. Like, if you're just doing email password, the NIST standard is like, you don't like want your password to, you want your password just to be, I think it's 8, maybe 10 characters or longer. And you don't want to dictate anything about that password. Like, you don't want to say like, special characters and or so on and so forth, because it makes it harder to remember, or you also don't want to make people change their passwords often. That's against NIST, because again, it's like, why? The thing you do want to check against with those passwords is leaked tables and leaked databases, and kind of in dealing with that aspect. Depending on how big you get, there will be people who and also depending on the kind of, like, if you're doing with anything with financials or crypto, like, those are going to be the juicy targets. So you'll start getting people trying brute force attacks on the passwords. And it's more like brute force attacks against known leaked passwords, which is where that leaked password thing comes in. Like, you shouldn't let anyone have that. Then if you want to avoid all of that, you can just opt to use OAuth. And now you're just punting kind of your security to whatever auth providers you provide, like Google OAuth. If you want to provide more than one OAuth provider, you need to know which OAuth provider actually, like, one, you can just have separate accounts for each OAuth provider, but say like your Gmail account shares a password or shares an email address with your Facebook account and shares an email address with your actual email address. Do you want your user to have separate accounts for each of those things, or do you want it to be one unified account? I guess that's less about security, but no, I mean, there are some security aspects to think about there. Of like, how do you want to merge these accounts? You need to do that safely. And the weakest link is going to be the weakest OAuth provider. And you need to make sure that emails are verified, or you need to do a verification at the point of trying to connect these things in this like hyper competitive world of getting people in. Maybe it's your consumer app as quickly as possible, and that's a critical flow. Then you need to start thinking about these things. maybe for whatever vertical you're doing, you think phone codes would be better because everyone has phone or WhatsApp code or Viber line, depending on what country you're in. Then, yeah, you need to just build out that best practice, which is send a code. You get 3 tries to try it. It expires after X amount of time. I don't know if I'm answering your question. I'm just like rattling off random security things.
I think you're covering more than I even expected. Like, I'm like, oh yeah, like he's kind of going down, like even to the UX perspective and thinking about like how you would even develop on like the, you know, okay, well you need an email address or not just a username because like, yeah, you probably want to be able to tie it to a email just in case of the forgot password. Yeah. I love all that kind of stuff. You touched on the brute force, which is always a fun one to deal with. Yeah. I think like, you covered a lot of good ones that we need to kind of think about.
I think the best thing on the brute force is too, is just locking out a customer. I think what we do is if somebody has attempted to get into any given email address 100 times, then completely locked out, you need an admin to unlock that account. And also on top of that, there is rate limiting where you can only try 3 times per 10 seconds. I don't actually know what the rate limit is, something like that. Again, to mitigate these attacks. I mean, there's also IP address type blocks that you can do, but then you get sophisticated actors who can just spin up a massive pool of IP addresses. So that doesn't work perfectly. I mean, people are creative. It's kind of a game of cat and mouse, I guess.
I think working like when I first started at Netflix, I did a lot of the sign up flows. So I led a team that did sign up and log in for across iOS, Android, web, and TV. And just some of the like interesting ways in which like people do try to attempt to like brute force or just various ways to get into even just someone's Netflix account is pretty creative. I'll give them that. It's like fairly creative. That was always my thing too, is I'm like, you're getting a free, you know, get to watch something for free. Like everyone has a Netflix account, which is not true. You know, like it definitely is being a US centric view on it is like pretty much US. A lot of people have access to, but a lot of it too was there was some countries where they would then in return, like lock people out of their account and sell it. So you could sell the Netflix account for cheaper. Right. So there was weird things like that people were doing. I think anytime when there's some money involved, if they can make some money on it at scale, then that's what will happen. But same thing, rate limiting is very useful. You hit the IP address bang on where I'm like, yeah, it works until it doesn't. Like it's like you can start to catch those bad actors, but people get smart too. So yeah, it's interesting. It's not even necessarily, you know, doing something weird with passwords. It's literally just like this traffic is obviously doing something malicious. There's no way that a human can type the password that fast. Like there's certain things that you can pick up on and just kind of prevent that user from trying to do that attack.
Yeah. Yeah. And something that we have half implemented at Clark is that Netflix is kind of famous for is locking down their accounts to one location. And it's like, you know, the IP address that they're signing in from, and you know how quickly a human being can travel across the world. And so you can add that kind of protection. But there's no reason everyone shouldn't have that. But again, it's kind of a pain to build. Like say you built that email password flow, like that's on one device. Now you need to be device aware, and session revocation is effectively now a thing. And you need to think about that. And these are just, these are things we built into Clark from day one. And it's like, again, we just looked at Google or GitHub or Facebook. I don't know if we looked at Netflix, probably not specifically. Although Netflix does have cool offloads across like the TV and scanning the QR code from your phone and stuff. We haven't done that.
That took a while though too. Yeah, it's like you need that for the TV. Like anytime you're like logging into a TV, it is painful. Netflix didn't do that for like the longest time. And I always hated that. Like, I'm like, oh, I don't want to, you don't do it often, but it's like that one time you're like, oh, I got a brand new TV and you're like having to do all those logins. Like it's not fun, but yeah, there's different ways like that. That's been cool. Slack has kind of always done that cool thing where you can like email yourself a link and then it generates and logs in. that one's, you know, not necessarily always the best, but you know, there's definitely some creative ways out there to make like logging in easier.
Yeah, I mean, those are magic links and they're quite,
that's the, yes, yes,
they're kind of annoying, quite frankly. Like, we don't, because we have so many applications using Clerk, we can look at general trends, and magic links are slower than OTPs for whatever reason often, and more troublesome of just like basically taking that six-digit code and copying it in. Maybe it's just that people are more used to it or something like that. Or it might actually just be that this is annoying at some point, and I don't even know where we stand on it. But Gmail in particular will delay your email by like 4 minutes or something like that if there's a link in the email. And so they do extra security scanning on it, which is a nightmare when you're like doing these like magic links and you try to like get around that. So, I mean, that was like very annoying with the magic link flow.
I didn't know that part of it though, too. And that makes a lot of sense, where it's like you're waiting for it and you're like that's annoying as a user.
Yeah, getting a magic link through a corporate firewall is very annoying. And if you're building a B2B app, we just flat out like don't use magic links, because you're going to be dealing with Microsoft Outlook, and they are the most aggressive email filterers. It's very annoying. So just use like OTPs or something else, and or SAML or whatever those things kind of need. So yeah, you kind of want to know your audience for sure.
That's funny. Even just like you saying that, I was like, yep, hadn't thought of that one too deeply. And I'm like, yeah, that actually is very annoying. So yes.
Yep. So these even practices. Worse, when some of those mail providers will automatically follow and click on links. So you need to be careful about that with magic links, because now you just, your email box just clicked on the link automatically, potentially send somebody in.
Right. And so it's things. Like, so basically it's like a bot opening it for you, the user that's like opening the email, or it's actually just like checking that link.
It's virus scanning, but it's effectively clicking that link to see what the email is about in order to decide whether or not it wants to filter or not. But if you're building a magic link flow, you need to, I mean, it's not hard to get around it, right? Like I'm the backend guy, so I'm a little fuzzy on this particular front piece. But it's like you like load an iframe or something, and then it doesn't get through the iframe, and the iframe automatically redirects. It's something like that. Don't quote me on that.
No, it's cool. Iframes still have their place here and there, like they really do.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome. I love that. Well, we touched on like OAuth a bit, and I wanted to maybe go in a little bit deeper on like, you know, maybe more in detail, like what role does OAuth play in the authentication, and like what are some common ways of integrating it too? Because I think over the years it's gotten like, there are some ways, like some frameworks I think around it, maybe I'm talking, you know, something I don't even know deeply about, but I have found that over the years that it's gotten a little bit easier to integrate because people are just abstracting it a bit, and obviously Clerk doing that now even better, but I'm curious on like what's available out there now.
I mean, so the basic flow is you go to some third party identity provider, and these terms are a little bit confusing. Like there's a lot of legacy OAuth terms that they just become a mouthful, but they kind of provide the identity. So you go to them, and they, with signing with Google, for example, you click on sign in with Google, redirect to Google. If you're already signed in, you just have to like press your name or whatever, and then it redirects back, which is nice. If you're not signed in, you have to go through their authentication flow on Google. But again, that's completely removed from your logic. So the things you have to handle are sending out to the OAuth provider. You usually provide some sort of state token. There's multiple different flows here. The mobile flow is different from the web flow because, spacing slightly. I forget exactly why. There's like in the mobile flow, you need to pass a state token because there's some sort of weird interception thing. I feel like I should know this off the top of the head, but I'm gonna blame the mule. You're muted now.
The mule does that to you, you know, a little bit of alcohol. It's like slows down the brain.
Yeah, don't code authentication with a mule in you. But anyway, it's like you're just dealing with the callback and then you need to check it. And now you basically have transferred the security credentials from that third party onto your application and then you can sign in. I think where OAuth becomes, I guess too, there's a layer on top of OAuth, which is OIDC, OpenID Connect, which is just basically the sharing of like the most basic login thing. Like OAuth as a spec is very large. And it includes like 5 or 6 different flows, maybe more. It even has like machine to machine auth has its own OAuth flow, which is, it's silly. It's like this over-engineered thing just to basically share a rotating secret key between two machines in your backend. But regardless, it's people who are used to the spec want the spec. People who just want to do the thing just want to do the thing. So it's like you got to play a fine balance there. But yeah, with OAuth, I think the more interesting thing is about sharing information and sharing rights across applications. And at that point, you're just granting scopes through OAuth and effectively allowing actions or authorization through OAuth. Yeah, I don't know. It lets you build really cool applications on top of things like Gmail, like GitHub obviously has a ton, especially GitHub's huge just because that's your code. You need to do CI/CD. You need to grant all these other applications rights. Google is also pretty big there because they have so many applications and things like read your email. But I mean, a lot of those scopes are scary. It's like you click on something and you're like, this thing can read your entire application, all your emails, and send emails on behalf of you. And you're just like, I just wanted to make an event through your GUI, like Calendly or something like that. So like, yeah, it's kind of scary there. But I don't know. In particular, I don't think OAuth is, I mean, OAuth is, I should say this. One, it's just one piece of the whole authentication story. And I don't think any individual piece is particularly interesting about the authentication story. It's all of them combined that you need to kind of merge into this user object and then do something with. But OAuth does allow that transferring, that authorization aspect, which is nice. And also there's a relative we can stand around it. I feel like I'm missing something else that I wanted to say with OAuth. I'm blanking though.
That mule, man. It's just, you know, that's fine. I love it. We have something to blame. Yeah, exactly.
I had a long day. I went to the gym. I came back. I was like, all right, let's jump in.
Let's talk authentication.
Exactly.
Maybe a more easier question too, before we, you know, dive into picks is, I'm curious, like, obviously we've covered some of the things that Clerk does, but I'm really curious, like, what, you know, what to expect as a user of Clerk.
I do think the main thing we're going after is that feeling of it just works how I expect it to work. Which is easier said than done. And I think with Clerk 2, it's interesting. And this is something that we haven't really touched on at all, but with any application, it all starts with the user. And the user in programming land originates at the sign up. Once you sign up, you now have a user. So with Clerk, we are really trying to make things associated with the user easier, which is a lot of things. So we have these like these components that basically match what Google has. So you get the most powerful one is like the user profile component. Basically, as soon as that person is signed up, now you can launch a user profile in one line of code. And that user can go in and add or change their email address, add or remove or change phone numbers, add TOTP methods, add connected accounts or OAuth accounts. I think we call them connected accounts, change their password and all of these things. So the user can just do all that through that component. And then that component will talk directly to Clerk's servers. So as a developer, you don't have to deal with the intermediary with your own server. And so Clerk makes that just a lot easier. And you get a lot of functionality right out of the box with one line of code with a component. So we've really dove into the React world pretty big, and we're still working on Angular and Vue and some other frameworks, Svelte. But our sweet spot right now is React and adding that functionality. It's kind of it's just a massively large problem of we have all of these authentication things that we need to deal with. Like passkeys are another thing that's new that we have out in beta that, you know, I personally think there's pros and cons, but a lot of people think it's all pros. And I think it will become good, but it's not quite good yet. But you like want to give your customers that option. And so that's an authentication option. So that takes away from us being able to invest in like Vue or Svelte or something like that. But yeah, I mean, that's really our goal, is just make it easier to build whatever you're building and not have to worry about this stuff. Again, easier said than done. We're not perfect. We're still trying to get better. But I think that's what you can expect, is the team behind it. We all really, it's a fun space to be. It's a fun space to be a developer selling to other developers and trying to make other developers' lives easier. You know, there's like no nonsense that we're not trying to game anyone's like emotions or something like that with like games or social media, which it's just, it does feel all good to some degree. Now, we obviously draw the line of like, we don't care what you're building. We just want you to build it easier. And I'm sure in the future, there'll be some application that is like, well, we can't, that's obviously messed up. Like we can't do that. Like that's illegal. Like we'll get in trouble if you do that. But you know, like, for the most part, we're just trying to build tools such that other people can do good things.
I really like that too. Like, I think like even earlier when we were talking about just that abstraction and why it's so helpful and useful, is that it's like, I want to go build my application. That's where I'm targeted, you know, or like a startup. They want to just get going and, you know, get that application out the door. And they don't want to have to deal with all these things. Or like you said, it's a full-time job to keep up with some of the security things. That's why there's like companies have massive security teams. Like they're not just sitting around doing nothing. Like they're, you know, like they're thinking about these things, paying attention and implementing these changes that need to happen. So I love all that too, where it's like thinking of that, if I'm going to build an application tomorrow, I'm like, I don't really want to have to deal with all those things, especially at the start, because you do just want to get to the races. Like you're like, I just want it out the door.
Like it kills the vibe. It's like, I'm trying to code this really cool thing. And it's like, do you start with the ugliness or do you build your application? They're like, well, I can't give this to anyone because, you know, it's just like it. I mean, I felt it as an iOS developer. I literally like had app ideas. I like built them. And then I was like, oh my God, it's going to be months of work just to build the like user stack side of it. And it just stopped me from building small ideas and putting them out there. And I mean, I think that's what developer tools is all about. And I think like, I like trying to push that forward. I think like, you know, there's definitely monopolized applications out there, but the lower the barrier to entry, the better. And it'll just allow more people to create applications and just build a better ecosystem on the internet. I mean, so it's cool. And it's odd that like authentication still doesn't fully feel solved, right? Like it doesn't. Nothing really feels still feels really solved, and like maybe it never will too, because you also need the competition of different platforms to kind of improve things and stuff like that. And yeah, it's hard. It's interesting. It's what makes it easy for me to be interested in talking about authentication for an hour, and still have missed ton of topics and
oh, you know, it's a deep topic. Like you could spend so many things. We've just scratched the high level of this stuff, and that's where I'm like, yeah, we can go very deep on it. I also think like you touched on something I really like too, is it's one of those problems at start where like nobody wants to deal with this, right? Like we said, we just want to build the application. But I think as an engineer, that's so cool, is dealing with fun problems, like challenges, and like dealing with that, and like all around the ecosystem around authentication is super interesting. Like that's the cool thing for you all, is you're like, we want to do this really great. We don't want you to have to think about it, but we're going to, you know, make that easier for you. It's still like fun challenges on your side of the fence, which is kind of cool.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, even scaling issues, like we get to play with kind of like edge compute too, because a user signs into a specific location, and Cloudflare has a lot of pretty exciting tools about putting that information in the location where the user is, more or less. Like, they have just tons of hops all around the world, but it adds complexity to the whole thing. And so when you are building an application, you obviously want latency to be as small as possible. We're obviously imposing this challenge on ourselves by trying to offer this as a service. Traditionally, like, you would just host this alongside your database, but we are building the tools to both, like, you can servicize it and still kind of have the benefit of the low latency, which hasn't ever really been possible, at least in a way for a company like Clerk to provide that feature set. Like, maybe Google is very good at it, or Facebook, but they're behemoths, right? They can invest in their own servers. Netflix as well. I don't even know what the CDN, like, pipeline of Netflix is. It's probably wild. It's probably really cool. But
it's interesting. It's a fun one of those deep paths that you can go down, and it's interesting to see, because you're right. Like, you're dealing with video too, like, especially early days of streaming. Like, it was not easy, right? So yes, it's you're right. Like, you can kind of just go in these down these, like, deep things that it's challenging. And you're right, scale in itself is always a fun challenge. And this is probably a good time for us to dive into picks. In each episode of the Front End Happy Hour podcast, we like to share things that we found interesting. Sometimes they're topic related, sometimes absolutely not. Braden, to not put you on the spot, I will go first with my pick, and, you know, let you choose something as well. For my pick, I just have one this episode, and it was an article I read on the New York Times. I think it was from about a month ago or so, but it was about car manufacturers, like brands selling your data, right? Like, now that we have more of these connected vehicles, like, a lot of cars have internet in some way, shape, or form, and there's a lot of data collected on you, on, like, how you accelerate, how you brake. I don't know if it's, like, location based. It probably has, it would have to have that, like, OnStar and things like that have to have all that information, but they're selling that data to actual, like, insurance companies. And, like, to me, that's so wrong. Now the insurance company is like, well, this person, Braden's a bad driver. He's always accelerating, stopping, all that. Like, there's no context to that data that's like, well, that doesn't make you a bad driver, but they're using that to then inform decisions. I know for me, I'm very guilty of accelerating all the time. It's like, I don't think that makes me a bad driver, but it's like, in their eyes, probably yes. Yeah, it was an interesting article that went deep on the details around this. GM was called out really hard for it. And since the article came out, they are now stopping selling your data, or so they say. So this is just an interesting little article that took me down a rabbit hole. So I thought it was pretty interesting. So I will link that one in the show notes.
Wow. Yeah, that's good. I'm going to keep my 2009 Scion T-Series.
Yeah, if it's not connected, you're like, wait, this is a bonus. Like, we're all going to go out and just be like, yeah, get rid of all that connected business.
Yeah. No, yeah, it's crazy. Cool.
Awesome. Yeah, so Braden, anything you want to share that you found interesting with our listeners?
I like things that are, like, so I feel like there are things that are a small benefit, but make a huge impact. Like, that small benefit makes you use that thing a lot more. And this is, like, classic gamification. Like, I guess this will be the first thing. Like, at one point I had, like, the Reddit app on my phone, and I was using it way too much, and I just deleted the app, and now I go to the website. But that additional friction of having to, like, type that into Safari and then go and visit Reddit just makes me use it less, and I'm not, like, stuck. Like, I don't get, like, trapped using it. So I think that's interesting. But this ties back to the thing I actually want to talk about, which is a very large tote bag. It's amazing. I have, like, I got this, like, 70-liter tote bag from Patagonia. And
that's large.
It's very big, but, like, I went skiing and you just throw all your shit in it. You don't have to, like, zip it up or anything. It's just an open bag. And it made skiing so much easier. And I love it. I would recommend the 70-liter tote bag from Patagonia. Carry all your stuff.
That's amazing. I love it. It's such a simple thing, like you said, but I can see how it would be very useful. So, very cool. Awesome.
Big tote bags.
Braden, thank you so much for coming on, sharing some really good insights into authentication, really sharing how Clerk works and operates. I love what you all are doing. I think that's like just music to my ears as a developer going, yes, thank you for taking some of the things off my plate. Awesome. If people want to learn more about Clerk or authentication, where can they get in touch with you?
So you can email me directly at braden@clerk.com or braden@clerk.dev, but you can also visit clerk.com and kind of learn more about the product. I guess spell my name, B-R-A-D-E-N.
Yeah, that's always a good one too. It's like, how is that spelled? Yeah, no. Well, thank you so much. And listeners, you can find us on Twitter at frontendhh, frontendhappyhour.com, on YouTube at frontendhh, you know, all the things. Yeah, thank you all for listening.
Thanks for having me.